So this morning I'll be discussing distribution of Medicaid claims and costs for infants receiving maternity care coordination in North Carolina. And the impetus for this study is that my colleagues and I were interested in looking at structural factors that influence both expenditures and claims for infants within the state, but ultimately birth outcomes and how these factors are related. But within the study, we'll specifically look at regional characteristics. So previous research has shown disparities in healthcare utilization and diagnosis in the U.S. and even abroad between the rich and the poor, urban and rural communities, minority and majority communities, and even between genders. With existing disparities, there's a need to determine possible factors that contribute to these disparities, including structural factors. So the role of regional characteristics, such as urban and rural characteristics, proximity to services based on geographic region, could potentially influence receipt of care and utilization of services. Understanding the influence of these structural factors may help to improve health outcomes ultimately. One such program, maternity care coordination, is a comprehensive case management program for women in North Carolina who are eligible for Medicaid. This program was established in the 1980s as a means to address access to care for pregnant women, not just prenatal care, but also looking at comprehensive services, connecting them with community services. Previous research has found that children and infants on Medicaid are more likely to receive well child visits as well as other health care services if their parent or mother were also enrolled in Medicaid during pregnancy. So our major research question explores whether Medicaid costs and claims differ by region within the state. Now, the state of North Carolina is divided into 6 perinatal care regions. Each region has usually a primary, secondary, and tertiary hospital. And these regions serve as catchment areas for maternity care coordination, which is a component of Baby Love. And this program, once again, it offers comprehensive prenatal care, outreach, and other community services for the Medicaid population. In our preliminary analysis, we explore whether costs and claims differed if a person lived in an urban or rural county, and we found that there was an association. So with this study, we wanted to look more broadly at the regions within the state. So our hypothesis was that women residing in the western perinatal region of North Carolina will have more claims and expenditures, below the mean, so lower expenditures compared to other regions. And the reason why we chose this western region as a referent is because the state of North Carolina in the western region is considered more rural. It's known as the Appalachian Mountain region, and we would expect women to be less likely to participate in some of the comprehensive services that Baby Love and Maternity Care Coordination offers. So our population includes all births for the state of North Carolina in 2004, linked with Medicaid and WIC files. So we have approximately 120,000 births for 2004, and our particular study included over 55,000 women. So these were singleton pregnancies, women who received Medicaid or who were eligible for Medicaid. Since maternity care coordination, to receive that type of service, you have to be eligible for Medicaid. And out of all births, 45% of the women were on Medicaid. The infant was not born with a birth defect. They were actually born in North Carolina versus an adjacent state. Some women may live in North Carolina but give birth in Virginia or Tennessee. And then the infant lived through the first year of life. So our main dependent variables were amounts paid, again, or expenditures by Medicaid, the total number of Medicaid infant claims, and these were calculated using the mean for the entire state. This included hospital, physician, and outpatient claims. It did not include what would be categorized as a drug claim or other claim. We had limited data on that information, so these are the specific claims that were included in our analyses. And our exposure of interest, our variable of interest, was once again the perinatal care region where they resided within that state. Other major covariates were the receipt of maternity care coordination, the number of infant diagnoses at birth, race, ethnicity, age, and education. So I wanted to give you a few descriptive statistics of the population in North Carolina, or the women in our study specifically, sorry. So out of all counties, we have 100 counties in the state, 33% of the women lived in what would be considered a rural county. This is a map of North Carolina, and it shows the six perinatal care regions. So just to describe a bit, the western region would be here, the Appalachian Mountain region. I hail from this region, which is considered the Triangle. So if you've heard of Chapel Hill, Durham, Raleigh, North Carolina, the state capital, this is in this region. For those of you familiar with Charlotte area, this is here, southwestern region. This is considered the eastern seaboard. And then we also have the southeastern region. So as you can see, the majority of the population fall within the eastern and northwestern regions of the state. As far as participation in maternity care coordination, 33% of the women actually participated. This is for the entire state. When you break that down by region, we see that almost half of the women in the western region actually participate. The other regions follow along this percentage, so about a third participate in the other regions throughout the state of North Carolina. This is a breakdown of race and ethnicity. The majority of the population were white non-Hispanic women, followed by black non-Hispanic, and we combined that with black Hispanic women. We had 0.18% who identified as black and Hispanic. We had about 2% of the women who were Native American, a little less than 2 who identified as Asian and Pacific Islander. So our analytic strategy, this was a cross-sectional study, and we applied logistic regression to derive odds ratios and confidence intervals. And basically what this allows us to do is to compare our western region with all other regions in the state. We adjusted for maternity care coordination, number of infant diagnoses, use of tobacco, race, ethnicity, maternal age, and education. So once again, our question is, we're looking at the association between the perinatal care region and number and cost of Medicaid claims for infants within the state of North Carolina in 2004. And we found that there was an association in both the number and costs within the state, and that women living in the western region were actually significantly more likely to have number and costs above the mean compared to other regions, which was actually the opposite of what our hypothesis was, which makes it very interesting for us to think about what could be driving this relationship. So the next four slides are actual odds ratios and confidence intervals. So the first slide here compares, once again, our referent is the western region, so it compares all other regions. Our null value would be 1, so the western region would be 1. We see that we do have a decrease in odds when you compare the northwestern, southwestern, southeastern, and eastern regions to the western. And this is within the first 60 days of life for the infant. We see the same pattern within the first year of life for expenditures or amounts paid by Medicaid. This is for the total number of claims. We see actually a decrease in odds for all other regions compared to the western region. And the same pattern is for the first year of life. So our analysis demonstrates an association between the perinatal care regions, urban and rural county as well, and total number of paid claims by Medicaid. Understanding the effects of regional characteristics, such as provision of services on the state and county level, can provide us with insight in regards to developing policies, but also specific initiatives, such as the Maternity Care Coordination Program, which we're focusing on, and how to connect women to this program, especially if there is a disparity in participation. So I actually had a strengths and limitations slide, so that my updated slides did not make it here, but I'll just talk about some of our strengths and limitations before I talk about the public health implications. So we had a complete case analysis. We had all births for 2004, which was a strength for us. We were able to explore regions within the state And this was the first of studies that we know that actually explore this question, looking at disparities within the region and its association with expenditures and claims. Some of the limitations, our distribution, our outcomes were, once again, expenditures as well as number of claims. And so we're considering alternative analyses, which I'll explain a bit in next steps. We could also not control for severity of infant diagnoses, which would be a factor in the number of claims and expenditures. We could control for the actual number of infant diagnoses, but not severity. So our public health implications. In a broader context, we see that regional characteristics were a factor, but the question that still remains is whether or not, or what about the region that affects this outcome? What about the Western region where we see this relationship? How does the Western region maybe compare to the Triangle region or the Triad where these outcomes were similar? We saw that all other regions, and considering the Eastern region, you had a lower odds of both expenditures and claims. And we also see that these structural factors have implications for women receiving comprehensive care services such as maternity care coordination, but also what are the implications regardless of maternal status before pregnancy and post. So our next steps are to employ some alternative analyses. Multi-level modeling or hierarchical linear modeling is one method we're considering, where you take into account cluster effects by county. Since women live within the county and this is one of our units of analyses, we would suspect that this would range by those units, so we need to take that into account. Our other alternative regression analyses would include Poisson, which takes into account the count variable. One of the things I explained earlier was that we use the mean, and so in this case with a distribution of outcomes that are not normal, we should also think about other alternative analyses such as Poisson. And future research could possibly explore the relationships between provision of services and utilization of services and how the two are influenced by structural factors. And finally, we're actually exploring racial and ethnic differences in these costs and claims within the state of North Carolina. We do have a poster tomorrow afternoon. If you're interested, I can give you more information about that. And I'd like to acknowledge the following people, and thank you for your time.
Well, I think we had a wide range of interesting topics that have all interrelated in many different ways, and I'd like to open the floor now to questions from the audience to any of our speakers. Repeat your question. So basically,
is there a recommended minimum time frame for the social marketing campaign?
What's the recommended minimum time frame for the social marketing campaign for Soul Food for Your Baby?
We're going to recommend that women exclusively breastfeed for at least 6 months. That's what's recommended.
Thank you.
you're asking why the focus on employed women versus other socioeconomic status and versus other age group less than 18. Basically, the main purpose of the study was to look at the total workload of women and their health status after childbirth. That was the main focus of the study, and the main funding agency was NIOSH, which is the National Institute for Occupational Health and Safety. So for the funding purposes, that's why the focus was employed women, and because the main research questions were looking at total workload. I was a doctoral student, and I looked at her questions for health, and she was focusing on physical and mental health status, meaning Padma Govern, the PI of the study. But she had also one measure of postpartum depression, which is the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale. And I was interested in postpartum depression, so I focused on that. So I looked at the work factors and the family factors that impacted postpartum depression. And then also, after that, I wanted to look at health services expenditures. So it was more of, you have this data and you are maximizing the use of it. It was not the basic aim of that study to look at those variables and their relationships. I hope that answered your question.
Okay.
Well, from my dissertation data, until women can benefit in terms of postpartum depression, decreasing the risk of postpartum depression, until if you take up to 6 months of leave, you're still benefiting from having a longer leave. After 6 months, it doesn't matter anymore. But until 6 months, I saw that there was there were benefits for postpartum mental health of women.
Yeah, the fastest growing population of working people are women of childbearing age, and we're seeing many, many women who are continuing in the workforce during pregnancy and coming back before their child is a year old. So it is a huge number of women that are affected by this as well. So the questions for Soul Food for Your Baby are women told about the information about how to eat healthy to have healthy breast milk? And the second question, integrating it with the units of the hospital to promote breastfeeding right after birth. And just a reminder that they're in the planning stages now, so these are things that they might be thinking about but not instituted yet.
We're going to be developing our breastfeeding curriculum, and that would be one thing that we're going to be talking about is the nutritional aspects. I know I was talking to one Black infant health contractor, and she was saying that one mother had eaten Cheetos and soda. That was her diet, and she was wondering why her baby was, having stomach pain and not, just crying all the time. And she said, you need to think about your diet, and what you take in is what your baby's going to be taking in too. So that is definitely something that we're going to be talking about, is good nutritional health for the mothers. And then as far as the hospitals are concerned, we're not going to be partnering with hospitals directly. We are, we do have getting on board the Association of Black Women Physicians, and we're going to be working with African American doctors in that group to promote healthy messages or promote breastfeeding with their clients. But yes, working with the hospitals is a key component. Maybe one day down the line we will be doing that, but not directly immediately. We do have the great a task force in Los Angeles that is really working with the hospitals to get them on board. They're trying to get a lot of baby-friendly hospitals in Los Angeles, which really advocates for breastfeeding right from birth and getting rid of the distribution of baby bags, which include formula and so forth at the hospital, and having the babies, you know, breastfeed right after birth and so forth. So that's what the Greater Task Force of LA is really working on, is really working with the hospitals. But that's not the focus of Soul Food for Your Baby at this point.
We've got a panelist question for you too, Elizabeth.
I actually have four related questions.
Hurry! I think we better do them one at a time. They're very long. Okay. Basically, just you're looking at the connection between C-section and breastfeeding, with the idea that C-sections might cause less opportunity for breastfeeding.
That is something that we will be addressing. Again, that's not going to be the focus of the project. We're really like looking at normal deliveries and getting the babies right on the breast, but we are going to address that in the education classes, you know, in case you do have a C-section, that you can have a successful breastfeeding experience, but just really coach the mothers through that about what to expect after a C-section, to address that in the education classes, but not extensively though. Okay, so the question is, are we getting activists, called lactivists, and also empowering women to be activists on behalf of promoting breastfeeding?
I wouldn't say that we were actively promoting women to be lactivists, but yes, we are going to empower women and have them be advocates for their own health care, especially in the hospital, so that they, after birth, they say, you know, I want my baby to be breastfed, no formula. I want my baby in my room. So a lot of women don't know that they can speak up for themselves at the hospital. So that is something that we are going to be addressing in the classes, as well as in the peer education things would happen after the babies have delivered. But yeah, that would be something that we are going to be addressing in the hospital, so that women know their rights to breastfeed and can speak up, and you know, definitely encourage them to breastfeed and to advocate for breastfeeding, especially in their social support network. We're really trying to get just at home that it's okay to do it at home in my mom's house, or that my boyfriend or my husband says that it's okay. Really like stirring it there and in the community. But no, we're not going to be having a big, you know, lactose.